Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody? You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you. And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, 28th of June, 2019, broadcasting from the heart of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the heart of the gospel, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hello, Don Bartlett. I am having a really good day here in East Tennessee.
Is there really such a thing?
Yeah, there really is.
I mean, such a thing as a really good day in East Tennessee.
Well, you know, I'm learning. This experience, I have been here now over 7 months, going on eight. My commitment to my sister and her daughter is that I will be here for sure for 1 year. I have no clue what's going to happen after that. But I...
Do you use a translator? Or do you understand the people of the... How do they sound? What do they sound?
No, but man, I'm having flashbacks like crazy. Oh my gosh. And there's such a diverse world here. It's just really quite amazing. But neither place feels a need to budge at all to kind of homogenize things. I mean, there are people here I cannot understand. That's just the honest truth.
Well, Barry Laney said to me last night, a fascinating thing. He said, "I don't understand some things my mother says." give me a for instance. And he said, well, when you let the water out of the sink, she says, drain. Yeah, drain. Just drain the water. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, you don't understand your own mama?
But if you heard that the entire time you were growing up, you'd think you would get the message. But yes.
And you'd only say it, like Barry went to the army, you'd only say it once in the army before that was the last time you ever said it.
But I really am embracing this massive cultural shift that I left when I was 15 years old. And there's some charm, there's some underbelly, there's some real surprises. Some of the people who may speak in a way that I may not even be able to understand a lot of the words they say are some of the most accepting and kind and culturally forward people that I've ever been around. I'm telling you, it's a mixed bag. But the thing that really has recaptured me, well, thing that has captured me for the first time, because you know when you're raised in an area, you don't know that you live in the middle of a tourist attraction. You don't know that you realize you live in the middle of a place people are flying from all over the world to go see. And boy, I'm really falling in love with East Tennessee. This is such a beautiful country here. Been on some roads that I remember when I was a kid, my uncle making the comment about a road that they had built. My uncle was a surveyor. He said that they built that road, and he said they built it by chasing a rattlesnake through the woods. So
oh, that is funny.
He said that's the way they surveyed it. They chased a rattlesnake through the woods. I have been on several of those rattlesnake chase surveyed roads. Oh, my gosh. What? Oh, you just wouldn't think that a car would make the maneuver to get around some of the places that you got to go.
Sydney was built like that, Sydney, Australia. And when you look at, for anyone who's listening from Sydney or knows Sydney, when you weave north, go up the top of York Street, over the bridge, out of the city, and you go through North Sydney there and in the next suburb, and it's printed like an ant crawled over a piece of paper. And when I asked about it, see, back then they had no traffic, no real cars, and that they only had bullock trains. That is a huge dray of something or other going up to the next town to supply them with goods, and they'd have maybe the bullock would be steers, we'd call them, and there might be two, four, six, eight bulls pulling this dray, and or bullocks, and what happened was, if there was a big tree, and they just meandered around the big trees, and they made the road. It's like that old thing that I do sometimes on the show called the calf path, It is. And so the roads just grew up and like windy, curvy.
Yeah, chased a rattlesnake through the woods, yeah.
I love it. I want to use it when I get back home. People say, who are you trying to be like? Oh, that Michael Williams, you know.
Mike's uncle, yeah.
Mike's uncle, yeah. Hey, mate, I've had a wonderful week. I've had the most incredible.
Well, who asked you? Don, how did your week go?
For a moment there, I thought we were going to go straight to the ending. And so, family, it is that we must...
We must leave you at this very moment quickly.
Well, actually, we must like you because we need your money. But mate, I had the good fortune to be invited to a Facebook group. Now, I haven't taken any of my other friends there. No one from the GR knows about this. But I was taken there by a fellow who is an ex-Worldwide Church of God follower, Herbert W. Armstrong, the Plain Truth, you know the ones. And before they split up, thanks to, oh, that's right, you. I have been in there, and it's a group of ex-Worldwide Church of God people who are all at each other's throats.
Yeah.
They're all at each other's throats, and it is as funny as a hatful. Mate, I've just had the best time, and if I don't answer the phone, guys, you'll know why it is. I'm having too much fun with these people. But the thing that came out of it to me was this. It doesn't matter how you were raised.
Yeah.
When you have outsourced your thinking.
Oh, my God.
When you get brain chained to a certain filter system, mate, breaking free is like, man, it's a job of the century.
It's a job of the century, and it is a group effort, Don. There are some of these that I can see around because I'm looking at it the way other people do, but sometimes even a group like the Gospel Revolution, as open-minded as us freaks are, sometimes we too are brain-chained so much that every one of us look at the same thing and stumble over it like a bunch of idiots, and I'm lead idiot here. I'm president and founder of that idiot club. And did we have an explosion happen this week into a part of Hebrews? Let me tell you.
Before you do that, let me just tell you, family, if you're wondering what on earth he's talking about, you find it on Facebook. On Facebook, it's called Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Just so you know where to go to find the Idiot Club.
Man, I'm telling you what. And you know what? The nice thing about it is this whole group can admit in a split second, my God, what an idiot I was, you know. And I love that about us. We have no problem saying I was wrong. It's just not a hesitation. In fact, we get excited about finding out we were wrong. It's like, wonder what I was wrong about today. You know?
because
once you find out you're wrong, now you're right.
Yeah.
We love learning. Oh, my gosh. Please challenge us. Challenge us however you can. because that's the way that this has moved forward. It is by allowing ourselves to be challenged, challenging ourselves. And this chapter 10 of Hebrews, we kind of had a shot and a reshot at it. And I've gotten comments that this is Hall of Fame stuff, you know. My God, I just can't believe what came out of Hebrews 10. Oh, my God. And these are people that have been listening to the gospel for 30 and 40 years.
Yeah.
So, Don, now I'm going to go ahead and let the folks know that I got a call this week.
Was it somebody offering money?
They've offered so much money and given so much money, I don't even know how they keep doing it. But
they never gave it to me.
No, they're not supposed to, Don.
Okay.
They give the Gospel Revolution money so I can give you money. But this call was so wonderful, so unpretentious, so void of any self-aggrandizement. It was just, gosh, look at this. Is there any possibility? And it's like, what do you mean, any possibility? This is one of the most wonderful things I've seen in ages. So.
Is there any alternative?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It was like, I haven't even looked at it, and I know you're right. And then, of course, I got home, and I looked at it, and, of course, they were absolutely right. So now, we are deliberately teasing you, but we also are deliberately leading you back through this gate. We're going to walk through three or four pastures quickly so that you can get the big scope of this again to see why this has become the insight of the year almost in this. But it doesn't surprise me because as we were talking, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you who I was talking to. It was Jeannie Hope.
Oh, Jeannie Hope.
Yeah.
Jeannie Hope, she always is putting herself forward. You know, she sits in the front she always sits in the front row at conferences and her boy is getting married. I think he might be married, I'm not sure.
Yes, Noah, his fiance, I'm going to say Donna, put myself out on a limb here, and they're getting married in July, and gosh, I would love to be able to be there.
Oh, yeah.
It would be such a joy. Neil, the whole family, you know, we're in our third generation of this family now, of the Gospel Revolution.
What special people.
Very, very much so. And Jeannie's husband's name is Bob Hope. So so now we can say Bob Hope is a part of the Gospel Revolution and not even be cheeky about it at all. So.
Can I play Bob Hope's theme song, Thanks for the Mammaries?
No, you cannot.
Oh, okay.
There's a problem with me saying no, you cannot, because I know what that does to you. It means I've got to do it. Yeah, man, there's nothing worse than a 67-year-old man who's been freed from the law. Let me tell you, I don't know where I'd find a 67-year-old man that's been freed from the law, but they're just the worst. Wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah. How old are we again, mate? Oh, dear.
Well, you are 67, and I am still 66.
Oh, no, don't pull that one on me, mate. You say every January, I now say I'm 60.
Yeah. Except for today.
Okay.
Anyway, this conversation, I actually grabbed the call real quickly. I have gym time every day that I have a sitter that comes and stays with my sister. My time is just very, I went from being, you know, a person doing what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, the way I wanted to do it, why I wanted to do it. I didn't do it if I didn't want to do it. And being, you know, if I do the laundry today, tomorrow, next week, you know, whether I do this, do that, it doesn't make any difference. I am the master of my fate, you know, the king of the palace and all this, to a situation where that my day is, once I get up, the clock starts ticking, such as today. And, but I grabbed this call. I saw that it came in while I was working out. And so I grabbed the call when I got in the truck so that I could talk on the way home. And but I never made it out of the parking lot. Jeannie grabbed my attention, and we went from there. All right, so what I'm going to do is back up, and I know that Jeannie is going to enjoy this because this is going to affirm her observations, I think. And let's nail down what we're talking about here. So we could go, well, we could go back to Hebrews chapter 1. But let's go back to Hebrews chapter 4, talking about, see, I did go back pretty far, didn't I?
This could be a long show.
It could be a very long show. Oh, man, I'm telling you. Oh, and every time I look back, oh, my gosh. Chapter 3, I swear I won't go back any farther. Wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, consider the apostle and high priest of our profession, Christ Jesus. So the writer of Hebrews is comparing, and as I looked back through this, Don, he's comparing Atonement Day to Atonement Day.
Okay.
That's what the whole comparison is. It's comparing Atonement Day, Jewish, Atonement Day, Christ.
Uh-huh.
Atonement Day, Jewish, Atonement Day, Christ. That's what this whole book is about. So then you go from chapter 3 into chapter 4, and that's all about the today thing that we went into. If you harden not your hearts, he was helping people to come to this moment in time, and that you have to decide. See, the Hebrews had experienced both atonements. They had experienced the atonement that happened on their Jewish calendar every year, and they had also gone through the atonement that happened at the cross. Now, what do you do with this? Two atonements, if you will. One incomplete, one imperfect, one only reminds you that you are defective, one that wiped all of it out, one, the law and the sin and everything, one that was complete, one that was perfect. So as you go through, then in chapter 5, then he brings this drastic comparison. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin. That's the Day of Atonement, right? Now, so he compares that to Christ, who is after the order of Melchizedek. So it's this constant comparing the Day of Atonement. Then chapter 6, the doctrines to be left behind, which we finally identified those as Apollos taught here, as the doctrines that he learned from John the Baptist. As I was talking to Jeannie, she said, we've got to go back into more history of that. And I totally agree. This relationship between Priscilla, Aquila, and Apollos and Paul, we need to go deeper into this to understand more of it. It is so ironic that they came and they pulled him aside and said, you know, there is a more perfect way, right?
Absolutely.
Well, guess what the whole book of Hebrews is about?
A better rest, a better sacrifice, a better high priest, a better covenant,
a more perfect way.
all the way. Yeah.
Oh, so I mean the translation of his information, his then grasping the understanding from his station, his place, his knowledge, his wisdom, his culture, listening then to Paul saying, oh my God, I get it. And then him building on that, that's why the book of Hebrews has come completely alive to us in the Gospel Revolution and many other people around the world. So we go from there. That's chapter 6. Chapter 7 is, if therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, which is still talking about the Day of Atonement, right?
Right.
And he's saying that perfection didn't come by that. and then into chapter 8. The first covenant and the second one's faulty. The Day of Atonement proved how faulty the covenant was. You know, the fault doesn't show up with the old covenant until the Day of Atonement, Don.
Say that again.
The other covenant, did the fault of it did not show up until the Day of Atonement.
Hmm.
See, you can do the rhetoric. You can do the, no, you got to do that. You can't do that. You do this instead of that. You can't carry your bed. You can't on Sunday. You got to observe the Sabbath. You got to do this. You can't do that. You got to observe this day, feast day, that day, this day, moons and suns and all of this. But you see, the fault of it didn't show up until the Day of Atonement.
Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I thought I just did.
yeah, but a stupid person could get confused.
Like, I'll help you, Don.
thank you, Brother Mike.
The faultiness showed up on the Day of Atonement in this fact. It was not able to atone for sin. It was not able to wipe out sin. It could only cover sin. It's like building the biggest and fastest airplane with the greatest and latest and best of technology. And then when the day comes, the thing won't fly. So, I mean, this is worse than the Titanic going down on its maiden voyage. This was the biggest and the best of man's planning, them being instructed even by God. And even being instructed by God, this was a faulty plan, but it was built faulty. Gosh, Don, you helped me so much to understanding the fault that was built into the plan from before the foundation of the world. Now, we're still learning about why that fault was built into it. There was fault built into Adam and Eve in the garden. Then there was deliberate fault placed into the first covenant.
Yeah.
Deliberate fault was there.
What do we call that in modern technology with cars? Built-in obsolescence.
Yes, it
is
was.
Is that what you mean? Or
I think that fits just as good as anything.
Okay.
So built-in fault. Well, why didn't God do it? But I just don't understand. I'm just giving up on this whole thing. I don't understand if God could have. Why couldn't he just made us like this perfect from the beginning? Because we're human beings. We have to learn how perfection works. We're still learning. We're learning how to be God in the earth, folks. And
you know, that is a big statement that. Yeah. God created us imperfect for a reason.
For perfection.
I mean, and what do we do in religion? We're trying to become perfect again.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm telling you, I'm excited this morning. I'm getting more than excited than what I thought I actually was. And
that's because I'm here.
Yes, of course. It's what I'm seeing on the screen. Which is the page Don's working from, just in case you think it's his picture. But anyway, it's our running sheet. So this imperfection was built in to show what perfection really is.
Wow.
This almost an illusion of separation.
Oh, you've just given me a thought.
Uh-oh.
So, imperfection was built into us so that when the marriage of God and humanity came, mm-hmm. we would actually get to appreciate our better half, so to speak.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you know how to enjoy a marriage if you haven't been not married? You know?
Oh, but that is – okay. You've given me something to think about for the next 3 years.
So here we are, you know, this incredible built-in obsolescence, as you say, this built-in fault. I would say in the area of learning in the Gospel Revolution, you know, I hear stories from people about people that dropped out of the Gospel Revolution 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Why? Well, I'm just so mad. I'm just so mad that I just don't understand why Mike and Jim Richards split up. I don't understand why it's so complicated. I don't understand why, you know, we have to keep learning and learning. My heart goes out to these folks because it's not the gospel that's complicated. It's your religion you had before you heard the gospel that was so complicated. You don't want to unravel all the knots.
Yep.
And you just want to throw up your hands and quit. But, you know, you can't. That's such a terrible place to be, folks. Resolve it. Whether you resolve that the gospel is correct or incorrect, that's up to you. But please don't stop where you are and then just start listening to everybody's everything about everything and just getting and which you're completely free to do. And we encourage that. But if you're not learning, why keep listening? Why just keep adding to? Maybe the gospel revolution was onto something you should have stuck with. And I try to think about if I would have stopped 2 years ago, Don. What if I'd have stopped a year ago? I'm telling you, we could talk the next 10 years about what we learned in the last year.
Oh, man.
And that has solidified and clarified. Clarity keeps coming. But this whole issue about why the process is the precipice on which now the gospel revolution now stands, we want to know why. And I think we've cracked open the first light of day. I think it's been cracking open just a bit for quite some time. That this process was necessary to integrate God and man together as one. It's a learning process. We are learning. If all of God, think of this, Don, if the parting of the Red Sea, the creation of the planets and the stars and all of that, if the floating axe head in, you know, in the Old Testament, goodness, some of you don't even know what I'm talking about with some of this stuff, but all of the stories, all of the miraculous things, if all of that has been converted now into a process of thought, logic, reason, and rationality, my God, there's no more Red Seas going to part. There's no more somebody going to appear in the sky. There's no more intervention. There's no more abandonment. There's no more turning to God, away from God. There is no more accepting Christ, rejecting Christ. There is no more making Jesus Lord, not making Jesus Lord. So the entire focus now changes to what? A learning process. And folks, I am not sad to tell you about that learning process.
And you can't have a learning process unless you're talking about stable elements.
Yes.
I mean, while the elements are still moving, what can you learn?
Oh, I like that, Don.
Yeah, all you know is that it could be different tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's the way it was under the old covenant. The elements were really not stabilized yet.
It was like the goalposts were always moving.
Yes, and no matter whose definition of the law you use, somebody else could move the goalpost to you, you. And the one go-to that I do for that is, let's just focus on two things. If you want to go back to the law, there's two things you must accept. If you break any law, you've broke them all. And if you use the law to judge anybody but yourself, you've broken every law. That really should be the end of the law.
You would think. I mean, if it was a car in a car dealership, it sure would be the end of the car brand.
It would indeed to make that announcement about that. It's like, well, then this whole damn thing don't work then.
Uh-huh.
There's got to be something else. There's got to be a Cadillac out there. There's got to be a Mercedes-Benz. There's got to be something other than this piece of junk you're trying to sell me here. So folks, I'm excited. Oh my gosh. Yes, I am coming up on my 67th birthday. And I cannot tell you that I've ever been more excited about the gospel than I am at this moment.
How good is that? How good
is that?
I mean, when I was in Christianity after the first few years, you know, I got it all together. I bought the T-shirt and all that. But there wasn't much more to learn.
Very true. Who gets to turn 67 and still excited about anything?
Wow. Yeah.
Much less what we're learning about the gospel. I know there's a deep appreciation for this gospel in people's hearts, and some are just, you know, twinkling their toes in the edge of this. I have family members that are listening that I didn't know were listening, and I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, what would it be while they're sitting there dangling their toes in this, that they just have a head fall plunge where they fell right into it. They're realizing there's something about this. There's something terribly logical about what, my crazy brother, my crazy cousin, my crazy uncle, whatever it is saying. We've all been warned about him all these years, and Mike's trying to teach a different way. I was thinking about that the other day. I realized that was kind of gone through the family and friends of the family. Well, you know,
I didn't realize this was, you know, true of both of us. In my family, I'm known as a mad uncle.
Yeah, well, we understand that, but me,
all right.
So this thing's been going on through the family, not the whole family, but I did catch wind of this, and that is, well, you know, and of course they're such wonderful people, and they say, you know, but Mike's just trying to teach a different way. That's the only problem. It's like, what? That's the problem? And the way you teach and believe is not a different way from 45,000 other denominations.
Oh boy.
That's all we have out there is different ways. My goodness. So it's funny to hear these things and hear them through different ears than what they're spoken from the mouth. It makes it sound like I'm the only person in the world teaching something different than what all Christians believe.
Oh, well, mate, maybe that gives your family comfort.
That's fine with me, you know, as long as they just keep listening a little bit now, that's all right. So let's continue on here. We found out about the covenant being different. Then we get to the end of chapter 9. For Christ has not entered into the holy place made with hands. What are we talking about? The Day of Atonement, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. So he's comparing atonement to atonement, a very specific day, right? Now, a lot of these people had started observing this again. Now, Apollos has nothing against that. He lets them know here as we go up into chapter 10, but he's saying you can't rely on that. You must separate these 2 days. Celebrate one if you want, but let it tell you about what has happened in the fact that it didn't work. Remind yourself, go through the meal, go through eating the sour grapes or whatever it is these poor people have.
Oh, sour grapes. That wasn't a bad food. It was sour, bitter herbs, sour bloody grapes. Some teacher you turn out to be.
Exactly. Go ahead and eat the briars. Whatever it is, I don't know.
Now they're briars?
Yeah, that's what you had to do, sit down and eat sour grapes and briars. but the go ahead and do that, but let it remind you of the divine covenant. Let it remind you of the more excellent way. This is what we are trying to tell you. I learned something from You know, my world got rocked just a few years ago. The subjects I was teaching on was repentance from dead works. I was preaching on faith toward God. I was preaching on doctrines of baptisms. I was preaching on laying on of hands, the ones where you do to send the goat out and take away the sins from the community. I was talking about resurrection of the dead coming. I was talking about eternal judgment coming. This is what I was up teaching, folks. And this couple was in my meeting that day. Kind bunch of people. They didn't storm me from the back. They didn't stand up and scream at me. They stood up, and after the meeting, while we were all mingling around, and we had some refreshments and stuff, and they kind of worked their way over to me, and they said, "Apollos, man, dude, you do this like nobody we've ever heard. But can we show you something that's more, boy, that's excellent? What you said was excellent. It was perfect. But can we show you a more perfect way? Can we show you a more excellent way?" Well, they evidently approached Apollos in a congenial way, because this man knew his stuff. An intelligent man, a well-learned man, a man who spoke a level of Greek that Paul himself did not speak. Communicator of communicators of all those that we have, including Paul. Paul got fiery. Paul got temper. He got this boy got lots of things.
But, well, he was a short person. You know what, Randy? You know what, Randy Newman? You know that song that he wrote about short people?
Well, you had to be to build tents. You know, you can't be a tall person. Be a tent maker.
All right.
But anyway, the this man on every level, even according to Paul, stands almost head and shoulders above Paul in Paul's sight. Now, yes. He doesn't stand head and shoulders above Paul in my sight. You know, in fact, the plea was, please see us equals, as equals.
Yeah.
That was the plea.
You say Apollos, you say mm-hmm. Cephas, you say Apollos, some say Paul. Listen, forget it. It just doesn't matter. We're all here as fellow servants.
We're all here regardless of our level of education, our Greek, where we came from. There is something so unifying about the gospel. You don't have to be concerned about who you heard it from. You just need to know for sure whether or not you're hearing it, because there's another gospel out there, and there's some pretty
perverts. There are some pretty perverts out there. Listen, what he's trying to say is Galatians 1, Paul says, hey, there's another gospel out there, which is not any bloody gospel at all. It's a nothing gospel. It's a nothing burger gospel is what this gospel is. And it's being preached by perverts. Oh, they got big titles. They superintendent of the of the conference. Director
pillars they are.
Pillars they are. I saw a pillar this week, mate. He was a pillar of the Church of God up in Ohio, and he has been a pornographer for quite some time. And I put this up on my own page, and I commented on this. And I had this Christian lady, lovely lady, by the name of Shirley, and she took me to task. Oh, you only ever hit up with Christians? And I said, yeah, but they're the only ones who are doing this crap in the name of Jesus. I'm sorry, mate. I've just stolen your bloody show. And mate, they're perverts. They're perverts. Even the ones who are preaching the alternative gospel are bloody perverts. And what's more, they're goddamned perverts. And that's what the Bible says. That's exactly what Paul says. He said, let them be accursed. There's only one person that can curse someone. That'd be God, I'd reckon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And he gave them a name. They were called Peter, James, and John.
Perverts. And here endeth the rant.
Well, I doubt that is the end, but we will move on now. And thank you. That was quite a beautiful rant, I think. The gravity of the impact of this gospel on this planet stands poised to revolutionize things even to a greater degree than what puritanical mindset that was transported from England to here, to these shores, and has spread from there throughout the world. Do you realize
that? Hang on. Just say puritanical.
Okay. Puritanical. Do you realize that mindset has permeated the whole planet to this degree? Do you know that of the countries in Africa who have the hardest line of torture and murder, actually, and laws passed against the gay community?
Well, it's funded
yes,
by Western Christianity.
It is indeed. That has been trackable right straight back to the prayer breakfast, actually. And I know we're just blowing some people's minds just by running through stuff we've already talked about.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's like bam, 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 you got me.
I knew a guy once, and he said, "Look, if I just go for the jugular with selling insurance, and if people just followed me up, they could make a fortune just getting the gleanings." But mate, and that's all we're doing. Well, it's not all we're doing, but we are sharing some gleanings here, and they're just dropping out of us because, family, this is, we've been here for a quarter of a century. Well, I wasn't, but Michael was, and I've been here as long as I've been here, and I'm not at 67 years old. I want to tell you something. There is nothing inside me that says, "Oh, I wasted my whole life." I know I believed something different. I know that I was a stalwart of Christianity. I know that all of that, but I don't feel I've wasted my life because it's all come to bring me to this point of where I am now. Gospel revolutionaries, same goes for you. You never wasted one bloody day of your life.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it all brought you to where you are now, which is a perfect place.
For all of it, just like you'd be thankful for the old covenant and love the law. Love your life like we love the law, because we want the law, because you want your old life back. No, we love it both because it brought us here. And we love the bondage we were in because the bondage brought us here. Is that necessary? No, it's not necessary. It's just the way it happened to us. We're hoping a generation will come to where that they won't go through all of this crap.
In my case, I had to get to a place where I hurt badly enough.
Yeah, and that's true with a lot of people. But you only had to get to where you hurt badly enough because you'd already bitten into the poison when you were a child. I mean, it was hand-fed to you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have had to break out of it if you'd have been told the truth from the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we did go through a process, and this process, now I want you to understand, that process can see in the broader sense from the creation to the completion of creation. I'm so glad I see the cross as the completion of creation, because that's really the way I see it. And why that delay, I'm telling you, there is reasons, and we're going to be exploring them here.
Gospel Revolution.
So here we have this, I mean, to me, I am looking at more than a Rembrandt, more than a Michelangelo here in this book of Hebrews. We are startled. We are amazed. We are profoundly moved by what we're seeing, what we're hearing, how it's being said, why it's being said. We know why it's being said. We know who the author is now. We know why this had such a big impact on his life. We know the impact it had on his life. So we've all moved through this in different ways, folks. Every one of us have an exactly same story in a whole different rhythm, a whole different lyric, if you will. But it's the same song. It's the same story. It's a different book. It's a different title, but it's all the same story. And that really, really amazes me about the gospel. So we get up through Hebrews chapter 10, and then we find out that by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. Wow. So the writer here is making sure, again, I'm sorry to be redundant, but this is so vitally important. He is making sure that their observation of the atonement and celebrating the atonement does not water down their understanding of the atonement that happened at the cross. I'll guarantee you, go through this from beginning to end, and that is going to be the number one comparison that you have throughout this writing by Apollos, because he was well versed in the previous, and he is bringing to light this, especially from the teachings of John the Baptist, which was the last prophet on earth before the cross. I mean, you see the directness of this information from people who are openly declared to be the last of their field. John the Baptist was declared by Christ to be the last and the greatest of his field. Now, here we have one of his disciples, a disciple of the last and the greatest of the understanding of the old covenant. But you see, John the Baptist was unlike his contemporaries. He knew there was a more perfect way. John the Baptist knew there was something powerfully new coming. But he still preached. So what did he do? He preached perfectly the old way because of the powerful perspective that comparison teaches all things, honestly. You can't learn something if you don't have something to compare it to. So why would it not make sense to bring John the Baptist, Jesus's first cousin, 6 months apart in birth? And here they are, preaching the fullness of the old about a new way that was coming as he preached the old. And what did he preach on? He preached on faith toward God. He preached on baptism. He preached on all of these wonderful atonement issues for the purpose of comparing. Now, that's what the writer of this book is trying to get people to do. Please compare atonements. I don't mind if you celebrate the old way. I don't mind that you not give up your Jewishness. We don't even try to get people to give up being whatever they are, Catholic or Islamic or any religion, Buddhist. But just use it now. Use everything you knew about Buddhism to compare that to the greatest thing that's ever happened on planet Earth. That you don't have to achieve nirvana. You are nirvana.
Whoa.
So hold on to your Buddhism. You know, celebrate it with your family, but use it as a point in your culture to help people see there's something better.
Wow.
And boy, Apollos did this in spades. Man, I'm telling you, John the Baptist was his teacher. Get that, folks. John the Baptist was his teacher. He was mentored by John the Baptist.
It's quite interesting because it's like John the Baptist preached the old covenant to its fullness, as we see in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 1 to 3. Jesus comes along, presents an alternative. No Apollos. We don't hear about Apollos. He could be dead for all we know. And then along comes Paul, 3 years in the desert, and gets taught by Jesus directly, the same as the disciples were, only Paul gets taught without all of the extraneous stuff.
Yeah.
And then along comes this Apollos guy, who understood both John the Baptist. I mean, understood him because he was raised at his, well, not raised at his knee, but he was raised as a disciple. He came up as a disciple.
Yes, he did.
He must have known about Jesus, had to have known about Jesus, could not. There's no way that Apollos did not know about Jesus during Jesus' lifetime and his ministry. Not that we know, but it's impossible not to be that.
No, place. Jesus' fame went throughout all the Roman Empire. It was impossible for a man, especially since his mentor lost his life during this time.
Yes, and here is Apollos, brought up in the second largest city in that Roman Empire. So now he suddenly appears in Hebrews and gives us this amazing comparison. I mean, tell me that there is not some dots to join here. He's taught the very best from the very best that the law could produce.
Yeah.
He hears about Jesus, gets taught in a more perfect way. What better person? Even Paul did not have this. Even Paul did not have the couldn't have done this. Wow.
Because Paul was not taught the Old Covenant perfectly. John the Baptist taught it perfectly. He nailed it all to the wall, spread it out like a mural on the Sistine Chapel, and said, here it is, dummies, you can't miss it. But there is a more perfect way coming. There's something else coming.
Mm-mm.
Now, you see, Paul preached the law. The difference between Paul and Apollos is that Paul preached the law with dim eyes, with the blinders that were imposed on the entire Jewish community from being able to see the truth yet. Apollos was taught by the last and the greatest prophet of that covenant with the greatest clarity about what that covenant was all about, and prepare ye the way of the Lord at the same time.
Wow.
So two totally different lives coming from two totally different perspectives, two totally different learning sources, and here they are preaching the very same gospel, but they also at a point in time where two unsuspecting people, I always wonder, what in the world is Priscilla and Aquila doing in here? They didn't teach anything. They didn't do anything. They're just so innocuous. They met Apollos, some guy named Apollos, and said, you know, there's a better way to teach than what you're teaching.
Really? Why even mention them?
So how did they get in the book, you know? Well, they just happened to be the crossroads of the doctrine that Paul was teaching, coming from Pharisaical background, and the doctrine that John the Baptist was teaching. To bring these two worlds together, oh my gosh. And Priscilla and Aquila, I think we're going to make marble statues of Priscilla and Aquila now. I mean, we're going to have a regular Priscilla and Aquila day in the gospel revolution.
Wow. And let us encourage you, family. And by family, I mean people who consider themselves gospel revolutionaries. Nothing is insignificant.
Nothing.
Life is filled with very thin threads. Nothing. Nothing you do is insignificant.
Yeah. Everything that you do to pursue and everything that you do to pursue your involvement in other people's lives. Folks, you don't have a life if you're not involved in other people's lives. You know, if it's...
Oh, hang on. Say that again.
I don't know what I said.
Well, I'm going to... What Mike just said was, you don't have a life if you're not involved in other people's lives.
Ah.
And one of the things here in Hebrews chapter 10, that Apollos says is, let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works.
Oh, wow.
You didn't know that you were quoting the Bible, Eddie.
I didn't know I was channeling Apollos, I guess is what I was doing.
There you go.
I've talked about him so much. He's just, you know, that little scene on Ghost where Patrick Swayze takes over Whoopi Goldberg. You know, being involved in other people's lives, that's the only thing you can do. Now, don't get involved in people's lives who are sucking the life out of you. It's I swear you have to be wise when you get involved in other people's lives. Sometimes helping people is not helping them. And let me say, especially in certain cultures, there are many people here in America, people wonder why, you know, Oprah Winfrey was questioned, why in the world she went on the other side of the continent to start a girls' school. You know, why not start one here? And she was highly criticized about that. But the fact of it was, she knew that what she was wanting to start had to be participated in by people who saw its value. And there are things in America, folks, we just do not hold valuable that are valuable. And we can let them go. There's things that sometimes helping people are not helping them.
Well, there's a reason why helping and enabling are two different words.
Well, that is the truth. And the attempt to help can be enabling. I see it all the time. And I try to be very judicious about, not judgmental, but judicious about where I offer help. And most people never know where I offer help because it is in the oddest little places. And sometimes I will start to help and I think it through and I realize that I'm enabling. I'm not helping. So anyway, that is Apollos' doctrine right there.
Gospel revolution.
These things really needed to be said because of this pivotal point that has lit my world that came from Jeannie Hope. I had called Don same day, told him, I asked him, what's it about? He went through how we skated over it in the show.
And we're very good at skating. We are. Let me tell you, family, we're figure skaters. That's what we are.
And we'll give you our best, but sometimes our best just isn't good enough. And we know it is not good enough many times. So we just wait. I still have that shelf, you know, that John Osteen very graciously introduced me to. It's to the left side of my head. It sits between the top of my head and my cheek. Just out of the line of sight of my peripheral vision, and I put it on a shelf. I figured if John Osteen can have a shelf that he puts things on and doesn't think about it until he's ready for it, I can have a shelf. And he told me about that personally in a private session with him, and I treasure that moment and those many moments that I had with John Osteen, who was very influential in my life and where I'm at in the gospel today. So here we are. Now he's telling them in verse 25, not forsaking the assembling of yourself. Don't forsake Atonement Day, right?
Yeah.
Don't forsake Atonement Day, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. What day has been talked about through the entire book?
Well, the return of the Lord Jesus. It's a rapture.
Yes, that one that Apollos talked about all the way through this book, a second coming, a future day, a future event. That one?
You have to be that one. Yeah.
It's the only one that pops into our minds, isn't it?
There you go.
Oh, man. Oh, as you see the day. Oh, yes. We all know what the day is. The day we have disproven to be in existence or in our future at all, we now revert back to it with the writer of the book of Hebrews, who never had a concept of an approaching day of the Lord, that the day of the Lord had already come and gone.
Never mentioned once?
Never mentioned one single time. But look where our brain chain was, folks.
Wow.
We were brain chained to a line.
Get out of here.
As you see the day approaching. Oh, we know what day that is. Oh, yeah, stupid. And I'm speaking to myself. Well, into Dawn. Oh, yeah, stupid.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
What day is now approaching, obviously, with this writer? The Day of Atonement is coming.
The day the day he has spoken about all the way from chapter 1.
All the way through, the day. Now, he has been preparing these people to make a choice. What are you going to do with the Day of Atonement this year?
It's coming up fast.
We've been talking about it. Now, what are you going to do with it? We've told you, you don't have to stop celebrating it. But as you see this day approaching, you've got some decisions to make. Why? Because if we sin willfully, there remains no more sacrifice for sins. How do you sin willfully? You got to be under the old covenant.
Well, can I just read through these three verses?
Oh, please do.
And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works.
Yes.
Same sentence, no breaks here. Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. So provoking one another to love and good works includes assembling ourselves together in the way that we Hebrews, speaking to Hebrews, we Hebrews always have considered assembling ourselves together.
So not forsaking the Atonement Day. Don't forsake Atonement Day.
Don't do it. But exhorting one another, building one another up.
About what? About the other side of this issue, the true day of appointment.
And get urgent. And get urgent about it as you see that day as you see Yom Kippur approaching. Get urgent about exhorting one another.
Yay, Jeannie Hope.
Oh, well. For if we sin willfully after that we've received the knowledge of the truth.
Yeah, and what? See? If you go back to the old after receiving the new, you got to understand what's going to happen to your brain. It's not what's going to happen between them and God. Hasn't he talked about the conscience all the way through this? What you're conscious of and what you're unconscious to?
Uh-huh.
Because if you sin willfully in your conscience, then you've gone back to a system where there remains no more sacrifice for sin.
Only a fearful looking for of judgment and fiery indignation. That's all you got.
That's it. That's the default line of thought. The only thing that you can do is be in fear of judgment and fiery judgment, which shall devour the adversaries. If you will properly discern the Day of Atonement, there's no other day to be considered any other focus whatsoever. Properly discern the Day of Atonement, my Jewish friends, he would be saying. Properly discern the Day of Atonement, and because if you don't properly observe the Day of Atonement, which was the cross, if you don't properly observe it, then you're going to be stuck with knowing that there's no more sacrifice for sins. Because if you are saying that Christ was a sacrifice for sin, he ain't doing this over and over again, folks. This isn't like the blood of bulls and goats where you go back and re-up and re-ante the next year. You're trying to mix the two together. As this day approaches, you need to get your thinking straightened out. You need to understand there is no mercy under the first covenant. Now, he says, and he goes on to say, now, if we do this, if you do this, he said, you know, you really ought to be punished worse than the guys who were under Moses' law. You really ought to. I'm telling you, this upsets me so bad that you so misconstrued this. You've got to understand that if this covenant works the way the old one did, you're going to be under more severe punishment than what the people under Moses suffered.
And we have to remember that this book is written by a Hebrew to Hebrews, but not just a Hebrew to Hebrews. It's written by a Hebrew to Hebrews who are thinking of going back under
exactly
Judaism.
Yeah.
Now, they have now decided they're going to go back under the old covenant. They've been demonized by their families. They've been anathematized by their friends. They've probably lost their job. They've gone off into this new thing called the Way. And once they were baptized, who knows what that conveyed to the Jews, that they changed their mind, that they were no longer Jewish. They had good reason. They wanted to put food on the table and keep a roof over the heads of their kids. And they had good reason for going back. And Apollos here is saying, look, you can if you want, but ain't nothing there for you.
Yeah.
Just ain't nothing there for you.
So as you see the day approaching, oh my gosh, how out of context this sentence followed by a comma has been taken out of its context. Oh my gosh. So much more as you see the day approaching. Wow. You see, if you see the day approaching as judgment and anger and wrath and the end of the world, you're not going around to provoke people to love and good works. You're just going around provoking people.
That went over my head. I had to wait and figure that one out.
Yeah, there's a difference between just provoking people and provoking people to love and good works. Stop and consider that in your belief system, folks. What does it cause you to do? Provoke people or just provoke to love and good works? I wish our politics only helped us to provoke people to love and good works, but we just go around provoking people. So here we are, folks, so much more as you see the day approaching. Man, Apollos knew that this day of atonement was still a hang-up. Remember the whole debate that took place in the book of Acts for Paul with the disciples, their reasoning for keeping the law and keeping the feast days was because there is a synagogue on every corner. And if you don't participate as Jews in Jewishness, you're going to lose your lives. This is not going to be tolerated. And I think Apollos was simply telling these people how to live peaceably in the middle of an adversarial situation with religious folks. You know, go ahead. You know, it's not going to hurt you to go in there. It's not going to hurt you, but just let it be for a whole different reason for you. I've actually told people that in going to church. I said, you don't have to stop going to church. Just let what they say encourage you more about the gospel. I don't forsake the assembling of myself together with the Christian community. I flip on TBN occasionally and the Word Channel and all of that, and we assemble together, and I get to sit there long enough till they make me mad.
You know, when they make you mad, you know what that is? No. What is the job of a shepherd? To feed his flock.
Yeah.
Now, the word for pastor is shepherd in the Greek. Problem is we have got too few shepherds and too many sheepdogs, but that's another story. But a shepherd is supposed to feed his sheep, yeah? He's supposed to sow seed. The only problem is most of the seed in most of the churches you ever hear is GMO. It's genetically modified bloody seed.
Yeah, exactly. And folks, we want you to know, hey, listen, we believe in giving credit where credit is due. This show is brought to you by Jeannie Hope. And we have this commercial break right now. And let me tell you something. Jeannie and her family has contributed massively to the gospel revolution. I don't mean to diminish that at all. But Jeannie, honey, what you just contributed to the gospel revolution outweighs every time you've ever contributed to the furtherment of this gospel, every time that we've been there. And in fact, all the way from Canada, they've sent in contributions, non-tax deductible contributions here to the States. My goodness, this is beautiful. We thank you so much for unbrain chaining us to as you see the day approaching. You unbrain chained us, and we appreciate it. I will be eternally grateful. I may have some of this put on my tombstone. Thank you, Jeannie.
Wonderful. Yes, this this week's program has been brought to you by Brill Cream, Buttermilk Biscuits, and Jeannie Hope. Thank you, Jeannie Hope. And so it is, family, that we must leave you. We'll have something else to tell you when we get our running sheet up. Oh, there it is. If you'd like to know anything more about the Gospel Revolution, then call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com, hit any link you like, and just fill your boots. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Gospel City, USA.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here in the Secret City, where we don't keep secrets. Thank you guys so much. We appreciate you. We're still in pledge drive. We are falling short by $3,000 on the pledge drive. I take responsibility for that. I simply have not had time to put the effort into the pledge drive that I normally do. And if any of you hear this, and even if you've given already in the pledge drive and you'd like to help us out with this bit of a shortfall and bring us up to even for this month, we've been very, very grateful that we're at a point to where that we can close out the books even. And we'd like to do that again this month. We don't have to try to convince you of the value of what you just heard. We don't have to try to convince you of the value of two men being on here who will hear from somebody else and realize that they have proven us dead wrong on comments that we've made about this verse. Now, probably nigh on to 50 years, we've both made comments about this verse, this half a verse.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we
it's
have.
Not even a whole verse, Don.
We've got to tell you, family, that we have skated over this. We both of us have skated over this, and because we didn't know where the heck do you fit this, as you see the day approaching stuff. Well, our brains all are defaulted to our filters that were still in place from the past, and because we didn't want to go there again, we just skated over it. I certainly did. Anyway, and having somebody to call us up and say,
yes,
have you thought of this? Oh my God, nothing tells me that we are one as powerfully as that does.
Yeah, and please, folks, you don't know how many times that just because I've gotten on a conversation in a pledge drive, Al Vitality has given me stuff that it's like, oh my gosh, now I can't even tell you what it is now. But I know it's now incorporated into the gospel.
I wish I hadn't said Al. I mean, he made a living hurting animals. It was just not
right. Yeah, right. but I could go down through a list. I mean, goodness gracious, from what Paul would say, the least to the greatest, whatever that means, because, you know, this is the everyone is equal in the gospel. And this knowledge, folks, what came out of Jeannie has been in her since she was conceived. You see, that's the exciting thing about this, is that at conception, we are absolutely convinced that the truth of the gospel is infused and it's there waiting to come out. Something didn't jump into Jeannie. Something jumped out of Jeannie. So Genie jumped out, like genies do.
We would have called that a demon in the old days.
I know. Well, this was of an angelic proportion here, and it has impacted the gospel revolution for the rest of our lives.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, and remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week.
It'll be different, and I'm sure better.
Thank you, family. Good night.
I was just flipped off by a silver-haired old lady with a honk if you love Jesus sticker on the bumper of her car.
Use only as directed. Absolutely no warranty expressed or implied. Contents under pressure. Use in a well-ventilated area. Do not use while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. No user serviceable parts inside. One size fits all. Parental guidance suggested. Severe pain has sometimes been reported and in rare cases, death. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure your prayer blessing. This supersedes all previous notices. This information is subject to change without notice. At all participating churches near you.
Love's calling you. Love's calling you. I hear the songbird sing his song for you. For love's been known far too long. It's time to hear your heartbeat. Hear your song. Your journey takes you far beyond your dreams. Within your soul, your heart's desire. Love's calling.
City Council was scheduled to vote on repealing the Fairness Ordinance, but they never got the chance. That's because Councilman Ron Webb changed his mind about his proposed ordinance. In December, the council voted to end discrimination based on sexual identity of preference. 10 days later, Webb introduced an ordinance to negate the council's vote. Now, Webb heard pleas from people in favor of fairness, but it wasn't until a transsexual woman quoted the Bible that he dropped his proposal.
Leviticus 20:13 states, if a man also lie with mankind as he lieth with a woman, they shall surely put him to death. I brought the first stone, Mr. Webb, in case that your Bible talk isn't just a smokescreen for personal prejudices.
Webb's decision to pull the proposal means that the Fairness Ordinance continues to be in effect. Now, that means that in Shreveport, people can't be fired or denied housing simply because they are gay or transgender.
Gospel Revolution.